You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's not Niall, because he's still in Korea. I'm hoping he manages to get back to the con in time. And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of October, the 28th of October. No, 28th of... let's start by saying that I'm not as over as this cold as I thought I had, was until I had a meeting I was dialing into at work, and I did a bunch of talking, and then I was all of a sudden, at the end I said, and I'm super exhausted just from doing all that talking. Turns out I'm not as over as cold as I thought. And that is still the case during a podcast. 28th of October to the 3rd of November.
Which is good for your brain, because there's not actually that much to cover.
No, because I think partly did the rugby on the Saturday.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the deal was on the Sunday.
But I think there was another sport thing on that interfered with it, but I can't think of what the fuck it was, yeah.
Loads of stuff wasn't on. And so, we start with... The other thing is, I was just everything on the mixer, because I'm back to recording it through the laptop, so I'm not as loud in my headphones, which is the other thing which has thrown me off.
sure.
So, we're going to start off with Super Shiro, Episode 3, A Jewel is the Bo-Bo-Bo-Bo-Bone, in which...
Bo-Bo-Bo-Bo-Bone. I have trouble with it as well, yeah.
Four bows, and then a bone. So this time, A Jewel is the Bo-Bo-Bo-Bone, and it is in a museum.
But they got to get past the high-tech security.
Well, first of all, Super Shiro's about to break in, but of course he's not going to break in because he's a good boy and he uses the dog flap.
The dog door that's in the jewellery shop, yeah, yeah.
Oh, jewellery. Yeah, it's a jewellery shop, obviously. But yeah, Deckapoo's, he's a bad boy, he's going to steal this bone.
Literally, he's just stealing random jewels, because, you know, evil, I guess.
The infrared laser beams are like heat rays.
Yeah, it's like the cartoon idea of laser beams. Like when you're a kid, you're like, "Ooh, those lasers will cut you." It's like, no, it's just set off an alarm when you cross them. But this show is entirely kid logic, hijinks of cartoon things. So yeah, they are heat lasers in this.
Shiro like uses a necklace as a pair of bowlers to.
That's pretty good,
He gets Jewel stuffed up his nose, inflates himself super big.
He causes your man to swallow an entire giant diamond.
That's it, yes.
And they distract each other by throwing a ball for each other because they are still dogs.
Yes. It's kind of a similar gag to them pulling each other out of the queue.
I don't mind that. I didn't feel like a repeat of it.
No,
I was like, okay, I get the dog joke and the fact that both of them, like, when Shiro's doing it, he's like, come here, boy, come here. And he's throwing it. Whereas when the other guy's doing it, he's kind of like pretending to throw it. And it's like, I didn't really throw it. The way you dick with a dog.
Yes.
They're evilly throwing a ball and goodly throwing a ball, if that makes sense.
He gets Shiro trapped in a case, but luckily Shiro's got a super soft body, which allows him to squeeze through the tiniest of gaps.
Shiro seems more like a cat in that regard than anything, but yeah.
Oh, did you see the video which was going around on Twitter with that one kitten?
They're escaping out the little air holes. Yeah, yeah. Cats are made of water. That's just the way of it.
Then Deckapoo's like trying to get through the beams on stilts while Shiro's wearing a suit of armor on his head, like a helmet of a suit of armor.
Yeah, he grabbed one from outside, but Deckapoo's getting pretty close, so he uses his power to stop time! that's a good bit.
But unfortunately, while time is stopped, Shiro himself cannot move either. So
his time is stopped, yeah.
Totally useless power. And that's when we get the ball throwing segment after that.
That's a good bit, and it does it switches from, like, you know, cartoon shenanigans like that to, rabbit season, duck season, where, you know, he's trying to fake him out with throwing the ball, that kind of way. Pretty good.
Then Deckapoo gets to the bone, and he throws the bone, but it breaks. It, well, there's like a there's a button underneath the bone, which
like a pressure sensitive thing. Sets the alarms off.
All the beams point at him and blow him up. And Shearer's got the bone, and this time he's absolutely positively sure that it's the real one.
I did like the way, oh, it was right for once, and I was like, just give it a sec. Okay, there it goes.
And a giant mushroom cloud with a bone shape in it. Blows everything up.
He's blowing up all these precious bones. I don't know.
Because they still seem to be really great bones.
They're really good bones, they're just not the greatest bone. Yeah.
No. Yeah, another good episode next week. Apparently an egg might be the bone.
Yeah, it's going to be climbing up a tree and dicking with each other doing that. That sounds good.
Yeah, this might be my favorite show of the week.
Like, I wouldn't say it's my favorite this season, but, or my favorite show of the week, but, it is very enjoyable, and obviously it being a short doesn't ever outstay its welcome.
Yeah, it does feel like the purest hit of...
Sure, yeah.
...of greatness. Then we got Null and Petter, episode 5. My big sister is dead.
The denouement.
Yes, in which Null is like, yeah, I can reboot her, but I can't back her up. So if I reboot her, she's going to have a completely blank personality. And then she's like...
Yeah, fuck it, it's fine.
But if I do that, then yeah, she will stop feeding me, she'll stop trying to bring me my, sports shorts and embarrassing me and trying to feed me that terrible rice dish. So maybe it won't be so bad. And then she remembers these terrible things that her big sister used to do, but this time it's not the robot one she's remembering, it's her dead one. And then, yes, she can't bring herself to do it because either the horrible things your siblings do to you, are still a fond memory you'll have.
Well, like, not everything, but I mean, like, in everything in this case, it's her sister's embarrassing her sister's feeding her manky food. It's like, it's all out of a place of kindness, so it's a good memory.
Yeah. And, but then something collides in, another satellite collides into the space station, which then bounces Petter around the space station, which then reboots her. They got to get off the space station because it's going to explode. And so they get off the space station and it explodes. And that's the episode. And much like Super Shiro, it is super animated for what is a very slight story, which is...
Yeah, it's like they crammed like a higher budget into a smaller amount of time and therefore can animate more. It's weird.
Yeah, I think, I think they're just better at... because it's a short, they can...
Condense better.
Yeah, they can manage their time better, I think. Manage their time and resources better. Than more people who've got to turn out half an hour every week.
Right.
Yeah, it was a good ending. And maybe one, well, I don't know if she'll get to school next week. I assume that's the payoff, is she eventually goes to school. There we got Blade of the Immortal, Act 4, Rin at Odds. Tell us about it, Wayne.
Right, I'll try and go through the main plot of it pretty quick. Rin and Manji are doing a training thing, and he's like, yeah, you're not very good, and your knife-throwing thing is more like a... If you get lucky because you threw a bunch of knives at them, hopefully one of them will hit. It's not a great super move, so probably leave the fighting to me and you run away. And she's kind of like berating herself, and... She's wandering off into the woods at one point, and she sees like a guy who's a really good swordsman, just like, you know, cutting the leaves kind of thing. And she's like, oh, fuck, I want to be like that guy. He's really good. Turns out that was Kagehisa, the main fucking antagonist of the show. And she's just like, oh, shit. Okay, I didn't want to fight the final boss right now. Her throwing a bunch of knives things, she does peg him with one, and that's about all she could manage. And he dropped his big... sword that he was chopping the leaves with, and she kind of doubles back to that and is like, you fool, you dropped your sword. And she kind of tries to pick it up. It's like, what the fuck, this thing weighs a ton. So he pins her sleeves to the fucking thing and kind of threatens her and that kind of jazz. But he's got like a giant hook axe that he was cutting leaves very easily with, because he's using the weight of it to do the kind of swinging for him. And he explains his entire fucking deal, including his background. So he killed her father because his grandpa, Kagehisa's, and Rin's father's father, so her grandpa, like, were competing for, like, the head of the school of whatever, the government kind of thing. And his grandpa got it and didn't really do anything with it, because the other guys were using experimental sword styles. They were trying to get better, and that's what samurai should do, try and get better. Whereas the grandfather wasn't really doing it. So since the grandfather had died, he killed Rin's father instead to kind of take the name of the school. It's just like, oh, you're just sitting on your laurels rather than trying to improve yourself as warriors, which is what he believes. So he actually kind of respects Rin for trying out weird, tricky things, and is just like, yeah, well, you have a goal to get better than me and kill me. That's you trying to progress. So he kind of appreciates her for that. But he had to kill her dad just out of a thing of honor for to keep his family's school alive. But then we kind of see his background, and his grandpa was like physically and mentally beating him. At one stage where they saw like a swordswoman and left her to die in a tree. It was kind of like, that's a bit weird. But when he came back to his grandpa, he's like, hey, the grandpa's like, was there a corpse there? He's like, yeah, no, there wasn't just a corpse. It was 50 corpses of all the animals she's slain to get away from them. And that was like a proof to him. It's just like, just cause you look weak, you're not really weak. But so the grandpa was like beating his grandson, and I was just like, yeah, you're going to take over the school. You should be a proper samurai, all this kind of thing. But then later on, he's like 10 or something like that. He's quite young, but he's already gotten a follower on his side. The guy with, who only has his wife's head stitched to his shoulder. And, his grandpa called in his old friend, a one-armed swordsman guy, who's like, hey, I need you to kill my grandson, cause he's going to kill me. And his the guy who's made loyal to him and his new style, because other than that, they're going to kill me and take over the school. Unfortunately, his old friend was like, yes, I'll do you a favor, old friend, cuts him in two, and goes like, hey, I'm joining your new school. Because obviously he said he was too weak to beat this new guy. So I was like, yeah, a swordsman who thinks he's too weak to beat another guy deserves to death and that kind of thing. So it's kind of like, so you didn't like your grandpa, and you're not really protecting the school. And the idea of him letting Rin go was like, more so him like respecting the fact that she's trying to get stronger, because his entire school is about getting stronger. It's not about really anything else. It's just one-on-one, get stronger. Doesn't matter, like, exotic techniques or swords or whatever. It's all good. So it's weird. He doesn't seem to have anything against her, and he seems to like want her to improve to maybe kill him, because that would be good for him too. It's a weird kind of situation, and he doesn't seem like the antagonist, or, I mean, like, when you know he's literally the guy who said, hey, kill her father and, rape her mother kind of thing. Yeah. Very, very fucking strange character. I'm curious as to what his more deal is, even though I know his background now. Yeah.
Jolly good. Over in Dr. Stone, we got more, what are these people deals situation going on?
The
episode 18, Stone Wars, where we get to meet Hyoga and a bunch of goons who don't have names.
Big muscly guys. Yes. I like the way it was like, oh, okay, they're going to plan for the next war. It's like, no, the guys are already here.
Yes. Yeah, so it recaps the end of the last episode where Gen says, he kind of didn't believe me, or he wasn't sure because I hadn't seen the body, so there's a bit of doubt, but also he was like,
if he's still alive, then he will totally go to that village and start a kingdom of science.
So we need to conquer that village.
Hmm.
And, so he'd convinced him to go ahead, that Gen would lead Hyoga and his men here.
Like, yeah, he'll infiltrate from the inside and he'll lead you to the village, that kind of thing. And Gen says, like, I just have to run on ahead of him so I could fucking tell you. And it's like, hey, they're already here at the bridge.
Yeah, and Kinro's like, I'll hold them back. Kinro, you go and tell everybody that they're here. And if I'm about to be defeated, cut the ropes on the bridge.
Because that way they can't get over, sure.
He takes care of the three goons, but it's...
Yeah, because they're all rushing, and even the other guy's like, dude, you're trying to rush a guy which you can only come at single file because he's on a bridge and he has a spear. He's going to win, just logically, like, yeah.
And Hyoga is one of these villains who constantly compliments his enemy.
What's his compliment?
It's a proper way of doing things.
This is a proper, the Kingdom of Science is proper, that's a proper way of fighting, that kind of thing, yeah.
I can't remember if that's how he speaks in the comic, because there's various bits of how the comic translates the dialogue, which isn't carried through into the anime. Because in the comic, Chrome is constantly declaring things as being bad, as in good. But with loads and loads of A's. Whereas that does not happen in the fan, in the fan subs, the legitimate subs, at all here. Hyoga fights with, what is his spear called? It's a Kuda Yari, which, I was looking that up, and it seems a very complicated weapon. It's a spear.
It's an actual
which
thing, though,
has
isn't it?
A tube, so you can twist it and...
It's the idea, it's on a flexible bit of bamboo. Yes. So, I mean, like, generally you'd have to do that twisting thing within your own hand, and obviously there's only a certain amount you can do that, but if you're... Your twisting hand is like the back hand of the spear, and then your holding hand is like holding the tube that it spins around. So it's hard to see what direction it's coming at you from. And it basically like, it's kind of like a, what do you call those fucking things for chopping up food? I can't think of the proper name for it.
Yeah.
Blender kind of situation on the end. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the key for our story is it's both, I think in terms of establishing Hyoga to a degree of like, not being as pure as like having a bit of science to him as well in that he's using this super.
Well, he's using a martial art basically. Yeah, he's using martial arts. More advanced than just being physically strong.
And
yeah.
It's also like a complicated weapon. So he's clearly had to build this weapon himself.
It's specialized skill and specialized, yes. materials. Yeah. Yeah.
And also it's a weapon which then for the purposes of the story can be sabotaged.
Yes.
So yeah, it's doing a double thing of like saying yeah, Hyoga is a certain different kind of,
and it makes sense that he would be like this kingdom of science is a proper kingdom, that kind of thing where he's like, hey, you guys are pretty fucking good. He respects not only martial skill like Kinra on the bridge, but he also respects like these guys have some fucking chops.
Yes, but Kinra ends up dangling off the edge of the bridge, and Kinra can't bring himself to cut the rope, even when people are screaming, think of the children at him. So Senku's like, I'm going to have to use Last of the Gunpowder to do a bluff. And we're going to try and convince these guys that we've already invented guns.
At this stage, your man is kind of hanging to the background, because they've fought through like their... As at the stage, they fight through, like, the... No, it isn't at that stage.
They get Magma to hurl a rock at the guy, and he's like, why
would I help? And he's like, why the fuck would I help? And it's like, because you can't rule the village if they take over the village, idiot.
And so he throws a rock, and they fill an iron tube up with the gunpowder and some dust and...
And yeah, even Magma's like, I'm not going to be able to hit him with a rock from here, dude. What the hell are you talking about? So he misses completely, like, it... explodes on the cliff below them basically, and but they hear a huge gunshot and see their boy knocking the gun out of his hand going like, oh my god, you guys, they got guns, let's get out of here.
Yes. Yeah,
it's, good bluff.
It's kind of like Hyoga's like, it's enough for him to stand back a bit and wait.
Yeah. And it's again the thing, we know that they know that we know that they know. It's like, okay, so we can't attack them because they have the guns, because we know they have guns. We can attack them when it's raining.
Yes.
Because they won't be able to light it. But they know that, so they'll be ready with some other plan when it rains.
And it's a plan that is so good that it makes Kaseki's clothes blow off his body.
he is, what do they say? Like, when he gets excited about something, he gets hard, which I was like, okay, interesting choice of words.
I think that's exactly the right choice of words.
Oh, no.
They did have three sisters covering their eyes, but one of them had...
one of them speaking.
Yes.
That is great. Oh, dear.
This fully erect old man. this is a situation now when the rest of the story gets told in the present and flashbacks to what Senku's
I like that as well, because you know he has a plan, but only him and the old man know the plan in the scene, yeah.
Yeah, so they approach, and the rain, he like tries to light a bomb. And it's like, oh, it goes out. And then they go, we've got him. But then Senku goes, we've got you as his samurai swordsman emerge.
I was thinking of, It's kind of like in when you're playing Civ and you have like, it's like, you know, the guy's coming at you with spears and stuff. It's like, dude, we've already developed muskets. You're fucked. It's like he's a level of technology above them, so they're super screwed.
Yes. And Hyoga realizes, yes, it's both. They'll easily beat the Stone Age weapons that his men are using.
Mm.
And also, because his men are also Japanese, they'll be like in awe of the fact these guys have got samurai swords in the first place.
Oh shit, a bunch of, like when they first show up, it does give them a shot of them all in the fucking, yes, traditional clothes, make them look like samurai. Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's Kinro, Ginro, Magma, Kahaku, and Kahaku's dad.
Does Kahaku's dad have a name?
I'm sure he does.
Yeah, I don't fucking remember.
Everyone gets a name in that big, like, everyone but one.
Because they kept calling him Chief, yes. So I probably actually haven't heard his name yet. Yeah.
In the comic, it's a big double page spread where everyone's name is under their face, except right. One character.
Okay.
Who we won't get to, really, this season. We have seen him, but okay. We won't get to him. Because his name is like a huge, massive clue. Her father is Kokuyo.
Oh, okay.
So defeat his men easily, but then Hyoga breaks out the spear and that proves more trouble. It's like a moon. And then we get some flashbacks. They like say, yeah, this is how you make a sword. They fold the metal 10 times, but we only have to do it 2 because science discovered that the other 8 times are entirely useless. They have no other thing.
Yeah, I think I think the quality of iron in Japan, like on the island is shite. So initially they had to fold it like a bunch of times and they just kept doing it just in case. But
yes.
Eventually they developed it far enough where science kind of looked at it. You need to fold it fucking twice and you're good. It's grand. But yeah, I imagine the 10 times was back when the impurities were higher, yes, and the smith work wasn't as good.
And I imagine people who take the actual smithing as like a meditative and traditional thing are probably still folded
yeah,
10 times.
Yeah, exactly. I imagine traditionally made ones are probably still folded like 10 times or whatever. Yeah.
Yes, but yeah, I do like that little bit of throwing in some sword trivia into the...
Yeah, because they're like hammering out the impurities and they're like, okay, well, now we got to do this 10 more times. I'm just fucking with you. We only got to do it twice.
Because science, I'm going to dazzle you with some more science.
Yeah.
I feel like you've now got characters like having to stop themselves calling it sorcery.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, this sorcery is, I mean, science is pretty good. This is the power of science.
Yeah.
When they're like swinging around swords and everyone's like impressed.
Yeah. So, Magma loses his sword, in the fight because, Hyoga disarms him.
Yeah, he gets cut up in the arm a bunch.
What does Gen's...
Oh, Kinro did get stabbed in the gut, when he was defending the bridge, but Senku did cure him by just, I don't know, what would you call it, like throwing fucking medicine at the wound?
Yeah, I can't remember what chemical he gives him. He feeds him a like, bunch of chemicals and then just hurls it at the wound.
Yeah, he specifies the thing. I think it was like a coagulant and shit. I can't remember. Or an anti-coagulant, whichever. One or the other, I always forget which one's which.
Yeah, I can't remember what Gen basically gives them a clue that they're three strong... Oh, no, he tells Hyoga to go after their three strongest fighters.
And Hyoga's like, yeah, I could see which were the three strongest, thanks. And so he's telling him information. He already knows, but he's giving them the hint of, you guys are the only guys who can beat this guy.
Yes, which Magma just runs straight in after being given Ginro's sword.
Taking, more yes. so.
And... They're like, oh, the other two are like, oh, we'll just have to use him as a distraction.
We'll work with him even though he fucking is not working with us. So we'll use his big body as a fucking shield and Kinro's gonna flip, Kohaku over.
Which is great timing because in the comic, they just use Magma as a distraction again. Because he ran off and did something he wasn't supposed to do.
I think, at least if he's predictable, you can plan around it. How about that?
Yeah, and, they launch, Kohaku in the air. And then, yeah, we see his spear start falling apart here, and then we get the flashback to hell.
Yeah, he's about to get Kohaku because he can even bend it up in the air when he needs to, but then you get his spear was damaged, and he's like, that's in a very specific kind of cut.
Yes. Hmm. And, then we get the flashback of, well, yes, Gen is bound to have left us clues to find out where they're camped. So this is a job for Detective Suika. And indeed he had. He'd left flowers, which normally only bloom
in sunshine,
in the dark, yes.
Mm.
In the shade, rather. And so, yes, because this is Sirika's playground. She knows all about the woods. And she's able to pass a tiny blade again, so he can then sabotage the sword.
A tiny hand blade with a hook on it, so he can do some magician shit. You know how it works.
Yeah, and so we go back to the present. He figures out that Ged wasn't on their side. But he
had nothing to prove it, so no. He couldn't really do anything about it.
And then
in this case, he's like, you think you really I did something? Ah, you got me, fucker.
Amazing drawing.
A big shit-eating grin. Yeah, yeah.
Does a bit of magic, jumps back onto the good guy side.
Explains the meaning of the flower in terms of he used to use it in his stage act, which was another big shit-eating grin, which was just fucking great.
Yes, because it's like, in flower language, it means liar.
Ah, dear.
And, so Hyoga is defeated for the time being.
Hmm.
It's given the Kingdom of Science a chance to breathe.
A little more time.
Yes. But obviously these guys might go back to Tsukasa and inform him.
Hmm. But even that, I did like that it was, they were there straight away, and then even with us, we got 3 days to prepare, basically. Well, they had 3 days. They didn't know how much time they would have until the next rainstorm.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yep. It was well executed. It was basically the story I'd forgot. I liked the first time round reading it, and pleasantly surprised to get it reminded. And yeah, the weird synchronicity of it matching up to the, of Magma. Being a loose cannon, matching up to it being a loose cannon in the current chapters, was a nice bit of timing. But I suspect there'll always be because of how well it's read and how well the characters are, I guess there's always going to be a chance that one character is going to mirror what's happening in the current story.
Yeah, since they tend to behave to their type and everything.
Then we've got Welcome to Demon School, Iruma-kun, episode 5, The One Who Wants to Be Demon King. In which we get more of Sabnok, but those flashbacks we saw in the preview, most of them are just nonsense.
Here are potential reasons that I would want to be Demon King. I had a dying sister who I promised I would be Demon King. My father once said, "You, son, you're destined to be the Demon King." My older brother left on a journey where we would eventually fight for the title of Demon King. No, none of that happened. It just sounds cool.
There was one little bit of interesting information is that his older brother's a pacifist demon.
Mm.
Is the actual truth. But his little sister's perfectly fine.
Mm.
And
he thinks his dad's kind of like a waster, really?
Yes, because his dad likes...
Because he doesn't aspire to anything more than what he is.
Yes. He appears to be like some sort of, smith or something, yeah.
Because his power is he can make a weapon out of the metal he's currently biting.
Yes.
Which is why he has that little necklace, yeah.
Yeah, so, he's on the ropes fighting the Guardian Beast. But then, Iruma thinks that the Guardian Beast's child is going to take him to the finish line, but no, it's heading into the most dangerous area, which is a very Warner Brothers style cartoon set of signs warning it. Like, no, seriously, don't go this way.
Yeah, each sign is more so like, what the fuck, did you not read that last sign kind of thing, yeah.
The final sign's like, hey! So he's about to deliver a finishing blow to Sabnok, and then Iruma-kun jumps in the way. And the child explains to his parent what the deal is. And Iruma gets Sabnok to put his sword down, because this is not how we're going to resolve this situation.
Yeah, initially Sabnok's like, what the fuck? This giant beast is like bowing to Iruma now. And he's like, don't bother me. And he's like, I'm going to go grab my sword. And he's like, dude, just fucking drop it. We're good. We're good here.
Meanwhile, Asmodeus has won the cross-country race, and coming in second is Clara, who has barely flown at all herself. I like that he, Asmodeus goes, you go back to the start and start again.
And then when they're given their ranking, she's like one below him, and he's like, this is bullshit. She's fucking, she didn't even do anything.
Eventually everyone's there apart from Aruma and Sabnok. Sabnok's already been wiped off, so the teacher wipes Aruma's name off, and then this giant beast arrives with the pair of them. And deposits.
Well, in the afternoon, like.
Yes, but they're both in the bad books for coming in late. And then
they're last place, so.
Yeah, but also because one of them went in the area that he wasn't allowed to go in.
Well, both of them did, technically.
Then the second half is the ranking bit, which is the highlight of the comedy of the episode.
Yeah.
Because they have to go and put their hands... The ranking owl shows up, who is apparently millennia old, we learned towards the end.
He's a millennia old, and his decision is always final, and he's never met a peep.
Yeah, I forgot about never made a peep. And so you put your hand in the...
In
ranking owl's pouch, and you pull out your badge, which tells you what rank you are.
Mm. And like the lower the number, the better, is it? Is that how it works? Or is it higher the number?
Is the higher the better, I think.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I could remember which direction it went.
Yes, it is, because Asmodeus pulls out rank 4, and they're like, normally you only get like rank 1 or 2.
Because you're a first year, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And then Clara pulls out rank 3, and the teacher's like, well, I guess luck is a skill as well.
Some people are just born lucky.
A lot of the class, I don't think anyone pulls out 1, do they? Everyone's got like getting 2 or 3. So it turns out that, getting some character. I was like, oh, why is that other girl in the class? And then you see how she's dressed fully, and it's like completely not suitable school uniform.
It's
like, oh, that'd be why she's in the problem class.
Not in uniform, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, she appears to be dressed like a stripper.
I mean, like, they are demons, so I guess that's a thing, but yeah, sure.
But yeah, most of them are dressed fairly chaste.
Yeah, and in school uniforms for the most part.
And in their school uniforms. Where she appears to be dressed up as sexy school uniform.
Halloween costume version, sure. Yeah.
And then it comes to Aruma, who puts his hand in the pouch. The bird screams. And then rather than a badge, he pulls out a ring, and then we get another flashback to Sabnok's past, where we've all established his dad was giving him, like, this, the prophecy of the Demon King, and the Demon King will be wearing the Ring of Solomon.
There's two things. Is it the Ring of Sullivan or the Ring of Solomon? Because I feel like if that's just Sullivan's fucking ring. But the other thing was, like, the Demon King will make everyone else serve him, I think was the idea.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Which I'm guessing people think, like, oh yes, rule with force. It's like, no, because your friends will help you when you need it, that kind of way.
And obviously, at the start of every episode, we clearly see Aruba King on the throne.
Spoilers.
Of the King.
Yeah.
Though, like a much older teenager or young adult one.
Yeah, he's got the same cowlick kind of thing, yeah.
They're like, everyone starts, and then this demon ghost thing, black smoke emerges.
From his ring, and it's like eating everyone's demonic power, I think.
It's making a load of noise to begin with.
Mm.
And
a scream that reached all the way back to the school, yeah.
Yes, and so Clara tries to, well, first of all, Aruba tries to, like, rock it to sleep.
That doesn't work. Clara sings a really dumb song. That works.
It does. She sings a very bad lullaby. She can't sing either. Everyone's like, now she's making that noise as well. But yes, it does actually work. Then it starts draining people of its energy when Sabnok gets in its face.
Right.
And then...
I did like the way your man Asmodeus was kind of like, no, I'm perfectly fine. Don't worry about me. It's like, no, you're really not, dude.
Because it's gnawing on his head. then the teacher approaches and he, like, foresees his arm being blown off, or his own arm disappearing as he approaches.
Yeah, it's like an illusion, like the weird creature out of Aruma's ring is kind of like going like, I will fucking explode your arm if you come near me. And he's just like, right, time to kill this child. That's the only way out of this situation.
And that's when Sullivan shows up and explains that it's like a ring of greed and it will.
So it like stores your demonic power, but if it doesn't have enough, it'll eat any demonic power around it.
Yes. And and please don't blow my grandson's arm off.
Yeah.
And so Sullivan fills it up by letting it feed on him, and it does not affect him at all.
Yeah, and everyone's kind of terrified by that.
So clearly this is... I mean, like he says, oh, a lot of weird things can come out of that pouch over a millennia. But presumably this is another ploy of his to hide the fact that his grandson's a human.
The fact that his grandson didn't get ranked, he still gets to, like, the lowest rank, which...
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, it's like, oh, he did get something out of the pouch, so that's probably still fine. He just didn't get a badge. We'll rank him one.
Yes.
And Ruma's like, oh, brilliant, one. That means I don't stand out at all. That's exactly what I want. But his legend spreads nonetheless.
And also now he has a source of demonic power in the ring.
Yeah.
And he also, yeah, they also point out that, yeah, the ring cannot be taken off once it's been put on.
Yeah.
Another fun episode. All the characters are very lovable, even the ones who don't like Iruma.
I mean, because generally, like, they still get fucked over when they're dicks. It's still a pretty fun one. There's a lot of plot stuff in this one, but it still managed to get a bunch of jokes in, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is because a lot of the plot stuff turned out to be a lie.
That was a good way to do the plot stuff. It's like, that's bullshit.
But there's like little inklings of like, there is clearly a prophecy of the Demon King, and a rumor seems to be fulfilling a lot.
There is a truth to the cool backstory he's given himself.
Yes,
yeah.
And Sabnock declares himself a rumor's rival, or declares a rumor.
He respects him now. It's like, oh, okay, now we're on the same level, so you're my rival. And Ruma's like, what? Okay.
And the post credits little funny clip is clearly like, there's more than just rivalry, because they're like riding on the back of the beast and he doesn't know what to grab onto. And so, Sabnock
holds him down with his body.
Yes.
Mm.
And there's nothing to be needed to do anyway, because it's then made clear that this is a very smooth flight. You don't need to hang on to anything.
Yeah, just sit on top and enjoy the ride.
And, looks like he gets like some sort of demonic cell phone. Next week, and it looks like they're growing plants.
Hmm.
Whatever reason. Yep. Should be good. I don't know much else. The only thing I know that is in the future is from the only thing I've seen of the comic was on Twitter of Clara reading some sort of manual on how to seduce somebody
okay.
in an attempt to make a rumor romantically interested in her, and it's very silly, and I cannot wait to see if that gets animated.
See, I feel like any other show doing this would be like your standard shonen thing, and obviously that's the kind of thing they were taking the piss with Sabnock, and Iruma just like, oh, everything comes to this way, everything goes his way, all the ladies love him and that kind of shit, but all of them do it in a fucking hilarious fashion. Yes. And he actually doesn't want to be the Demon King, he doesn't want to stand out or be anything more than regular old Iruma.
Oh, it's the it's next week's episode is to do with the girl who's the head of the
the one with like fox ears or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
The class council, the
student
council,
student
council,
whatever they're called.
Is what she is. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's to do with her. The one character I was like, oh, she's a main character. I don't know how she interacts with these people, because she's clearly not a misfit. But
yeah, she's more like a proper student.
Her and her two sidekicks are on the webpage as characters. So I was like,
okay.
How do they get involved? Well, I guess we find out next week.
Hmm.
Then we've got Vinland Saga, episode 17, Servant. In which I was annoyed that I'd already made my Horrible Histories music video before this episode.
Was there something perfect for it?
Because there's a line in it about getting your head chopped off, literally. Which luckily there was at least two scenes of that had already happened.
There's loads of decapitations in this, that's not a problem.
But there are some great decapitations in this. And there's lots of violence. This may be the bloodiest episode yet.
I feel like, I don't know. Maybe, probably, actually, yeah. There is a bunch of chopping going on anyway.
Yeah, the horse gets stabbed in the head and...
I like the horse getting stabbed in the head because it was done as a fucking joke. He's like, yeah, come at me with everything you got. And he's like, hey, hey, don't go for the fucking horse. I didn't come for me.
So scattered throughout the episode, we get some flashbacks to Ashgalad's youth and his mother explaining
the bear survival, yeah,
about the return. One day, Arturius will return from Avalon.
He's gone to Avalon. It's like, what, didn't he live hundreds of years ago, man? They have fairies over there, and he's recuperating from the wars. Okay, sure.
Yeah, first of all, set up the Ashgalad at the end, say, I've waited too long. I couldn't wait any longer for Arturius, so I had to start doing things myself.
Mm.
But yeah, this is where we get the... So his men have turned on him. Bjorn manages to set off with the monk and the two boys.
Mm.
The friar, rather, and the two boys. You get in pursuit, and he's got to fight off 50 or so men himself on his own. Meanwhile, Thorkell's standing on a hill, squinting, trying to figure out what's going on.
And he's like, what the fuck are they doing over there? And the other guys are like, oh, it looks like they're fighting amongst themselves. They must really be scared. And Thorkell's like, sons of bitches, they started the fight without me.
And then his mate's like, well, that's your problem. They're just going to let him go first.
Yeah, fuck it. That's the safest way, standing behind a Thorkell.
Hmm. Yes. So, and then we get Ashgalad exclaims, yeah, I don't like, I hate you Danes. You're filthy like pigs.
Because he has the thing, he's like, listen, Ashgalad, you can just run now. We don't want to kill you. We've worked together for ages. And he's like, yeah, I've worked together for you guys for years now. So, it's been a few years? Yeah, yeah. Now I've always wanted to tell you, fuck you guys, you suck. Which was just like such a baller move, but not maybe the best idea, but obviously that's his plan.
Yeah. At this point, Bjorn is still in hearing distance of him saying this, but he's still loyal to Ashgalad. Because he says whatever order, they kind of know that he gets the other guy to admit that, like, whatever order Ashgalad's going to give him, he's going to follow it.
Yeah.
Unlike the rest of them. And that is to you.
Bjorn is actually loyal.
Yes. And then Thorkell shows up, kills a bunch of dudes, meets Ashgalad. He's like, finally meets Ashgalad. He says, Thorfinn here? No, Thorfinn's not here. But he recognizes that Ashgalad's got intelligence about him. And so basically,
he's been holding off all these guys. Yes. So it's like, oh, this guy's the best fighter here. Okay.
And tells his men, right, kill everybody apart from Ashgalad. And they basically surround the other of Ashgalad's crew, and he tells them,
like, let them pick up their weapons, because you still want to go to Valhalla, right, guys? Come on.
And it's like the pause, you know the friars got into some of their heads now. It's like, they're not entirely sure that Valhalla is a real thing anymore.
Yeah.
And, whichever one of the brothers is still there with them, like, has a complete mental breakdown.
Because Thorkell's like, hey, pick up your axe. We'll fight to the death. I'll send you the thing. You're lucky. You lucky son of a gun. Here we go. You ready? Ready to get killed? Here we go. Fuck. I broke him.
The horse gets killed. The sled goes over. Thorfinn takes a bunch of them out. Then Bjorn emerges from underneath the sled and chomps down.
Munching a mushroom.
Chomps down on all his mushrooms. Thorfinn heads back, because he's like, well, once he meets Thorkell, because Thorkell's like confused, he's like, isn't this guy your boss? He goes, no, he's not my boss, I want to kill him, and I'm not going to let you, he thinks that Thorkell's...
Touch a hair on the guy I want to kill's head, I'll kill you.
Yes. And Thorkell's been, oh, he's threatening Thorkell. Thorkell's men don't realize that Thorkell sees Thorfinn as a legitimate rival.
Yeah. They're just like, oh, some little kid fucking wants to fight Thorkell. That should be fucking hilarious.
And we'll find out just how hilarious it is next week. Because that's where it leaves us.
Ashgalad is also disgusted by this, because basically they're fighting over him at this stage.
Yes.
The right to kill him, pretty much. But yeah, that.
I can't remember where where Canute is at the end of this. He lands in the snow.
So yeah, they check and see if he's breathing, and that's about the extent he gets. And then Bjorn pops out from under the sled, so his fate is in the air, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway, another Thorkell Thorfinn face off next week.
Hmm.
What episode we're on now? 17.
So I think this one manages to be so bloody because they haven't gotten very far from where they chopped the bridge down last episode, yes. But it's kind of like there's a lot of fighting to be doing.
Yeah, most of it is either people sticking things into Ashkelad. Ashkelad chops like a guy's head in half at one point in this. I think that's
chops right through his fucking helmet, which is class. And everyone's like, oh shit.
Yeah, it's pretty. I'm not sure where the pacing is now, whether it's going to hit the end point I thought it was going to hit, but.
Okay.
We shall see, because I know there's like a big Ashkelad flashback at some point coming up, where we get the origin of his name and his general distaste for Danes.
Like, he's already voiced it to some extent, but yeah.
Yeah. And I just can't remember like how quickly everything happens at the end of this story.
Right.
So yeah, I'm not sure whether Ashkelad's story will all be told within this season or whether it will spread into the next.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's fun. It's a fun watch. Yeah, this is not one of the super miserable, depressing episodes.
You're kind of too much in the fight to get into the the bloody murder that's happening around you,
And you kind of, it's most of the charismatic players are on the board. At this point. Except for Canute, but he hasn't turned into the charismatic player yet. But he will be. Because obviously from history, we know he becomes king. And he becomes a king to such an extent where people ask him to try and hold back the water. And as if to prove a point, he shows them that he can't. But we will actually get that in, that a version of that scene will appear in the story, but not for a while yet. But I was like, when I got to that in the comic, I was like, oh wow, he managed to work that story in and it kind of plays out how it actually happened to a degree.
How it happened, but also how it was happening
is the same.
Okay.
As opposed to the reason I was mistold in childhood, and eventually you're like, oh no, he wasn't that he thought he could hold back the sea, it was that he was proving that he couldn't hold back the sea. But that's down the line for this story. Or just go and look at Wikipedia and read it for yourself. But it just won't tell you that characters from this were there. But then we've got, finally, Babylon... I was about to say Babylon 5. Babylon Episode 5. Babylon 5 is an entirely different thing. Chase. In which the first episode we get Imagase's background from her uncle.
You were saying this was a lot, and I was wondering what you meant by that, but I kind of think I see.
It certainly is. It certainly is something. So apparently... Imagase, ever since middle school, ever since she was 15, has been so incredibly sexy, it drives men insane.
So, yeah, they go meet, it's like, okay, her uncle, or her pediatrician was her uncle, so we can go talk to him. He works out in this podunk kind of town, but we'll go talk to him and see if we can get some background info on this woman we're trying to hunt down. And he's like, yes, I'm going to be entirely frank. I remember my niece quite well. There was an incident. I don't know if you call it an incident because you can't really say anything fucking happened, but what's the way he says it? Like five of the, she,
it,
he
it
took,
was like seven of her classmates. Seven.
Yeah.
Claimed that she had raped them.
And they were like, what? Like she had sex with him? And he's like, nope, she didn't touch him. She didn't say anything to him. But that's the way they maintain it. So he says, well, I was confused by this until the same thing happened to me. And that was weird to see. Like, because obviously they have to animate this fucking idea because it doesn't even make sense when you explain it with words.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I forgot how they animated, which is him completely, imagining himself completely naked, surrounded by like eight of her.
Yeah. No touching, no anything happening, just him obviously in fucking orgasmic throes, on the thing. And they're like, wait, so you didn't, like, no, I didn't. It was really fucked up. So I recommended she got taken in for counseling, I think it was.
Yeah, she, like, yeah, visit his, where he works for counseling.
Yeah, and he was kind of, the only questions he kind of asked her was like, hey, how, like, you want to do that? And she's like, yeah, because I'm not very good at talking to
that's
people.
That's the key. Yeah, because it's like, she's not very good at talking. So it's like.
And he's like, yeah, how could you be if that's what happens when you walk into the fucking room?
But what did she aware, did she, was she aware that she needed to get better at talking? And that's how she's then now able to.
Yes. Was that practice? Was yes. Basically the idea. Definitely.
And then after 6 months, she stopped going. And then he decided that.
I'm going to leave forever now.
Yes. Because terrible thoughts I've had, and also I'm scared of her.
Like, yeah, he's scared of her. He obviously feels violated. And like, it's like, I wanted to fuck my teenage niece. That's messed up. I'm going to leave forever, basically.
Yeah, and he's not seen her ever since, because they're like, you must have had plenty
of. That was like 8 years ago or something, yeah.
Yeah, she was born in 96, we see from the details.
But she was, like, again, she's adopted, so she's this mystery fucking completely as to her background, because he only met her for the first time when she was 10 or something.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, when she was a kid, at least.
I mean, I'm hoping there is no explanation of why. I'm hoping it's just that men are really horny.
Basically, it seems to be superpowers that she has, as far as I can fucking tell. She's got shape-shifting and... what's that fucking thing Wolverine's kid had? Like, pheromone control or some shit? That's weird.
Yeah, well, is it shape-shifting or is she just really good at wearing a wig?
Yeah, I mean, the body shape and the way she carries herself, and obviously different wigs, seems to be doing a lot to make her look completely different.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping there's no explanation that's, like, supernatural or scientific. It's just that... And also,
she's very good at manipulating men. She seemed to be good at manipulating women as well, which is the other thing.
Yes. Because it wasn't all men who threw themselves off the top of the building. Then we get to the second half, which is Itsuki has declared that there's going to be a debate. He will represent the pro-suicide view, and any of the people running for the election who are on the opposite side, as many of them as want, can come along and debate it.
We'll meet on at this network so they can broadcast it to the world and do everything out in the open.
Now, this isn't him actually speaking, though. This is a statement which is then read out by the newsreader who we...
Which makes it seem like he's super fucking dead.
Particularly because it's presented, though, her voice turns into his voice as we're watching it.
Yes.
They get a... call. So he says, right, we're going to take everybody but two people off the investigation. Everybody else, because we now know when he's going to show up, so we just need to figure out...
We know where he's going to be, so we just need to get the... We need to pin something on him so we can actually fucking arrest him.
Yes.
Because he's only, like, partially implicated without any fucking evidence in the suicides. Because basically he made the announcement suicide is legal, and then, like, 60 people... Is it 60 people?
Yeah, something like
that. A lot of fucking people killed themselves on the announcement, basically.
Then he gets a call from the guy from Sex Crimes.
But before that, I think it was at the end of the first part, his secretary went, hey, I thought you were doing like corrupt shit, so I'm actually going to work with you now because I see you're actually doing the right thing. Because we talked to that crazy fucking doctor, and that was pretty good.
Yeah,
I like the way she's trying to like go like, yeah, you know, I trust you now. I still don't fucking trust her though.
Well, it makes it clear that you can by the end, because...
Does it though?
She can't be... her, because
she could be.
How could it be?
That's
her?
My.
Because we see her.
But we see her, but like, I'm like, could this be like a pre-recorded message? That's the kind of thing. I'm just like, it's trusting your man as the point of view character, and also trusting the show is actually telling us the truth. That kind of way.
That's the truth. I mean, the thing
is, is that basically the representation of her speaking in the investigator's ear earlier that day? That kind of way. And he's just playing a recorded message.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. You don't fucking know. That's the thing.
But I feel like it's trying to make you think it's not. And...
it's definitely trying to make me think that she is on his side and totally not that evil, murdery yeah. woman.
I feel like she is... Currently, I feel like she's there to be the character who is not going to be seduced by her.
Right. I'm not assuming it's definitely her. I'm just saying it could be, and the fact that thought is still in my head right now.
I think you. Okay, it's not in my head anymore, but you know, you might have placed it back into the head. But
sorry. it's a multiple things are possible in this.
I think he's having them because he hears the collision as the phone hits the floor.
So, like, the investigator would have to have been playing a recorded message into his phone rather than talking into it and then get himself run over.
Yes.
Because I'm going to guess she's not going to be at the scene of the fucking crime.
No.
And it's entirely possible she wasn't to begin with.
But what happens is he gets called from the sex crimes investigator. He answers it, but it's Oliver Gassay. And then she asks him, have you ever heard of it? Do you play video games? Are you familiar with role-playing games? Are you familiar with all these tropes of the hero? Well,
I was listening to the call and I was like, interaction. It's like, hey, do you like games? And he's like, what do you mean by games? And he's like, you know, games. Like, I like RPGs. Like, that was the only part she interacted with him. And that could have been like, he'll go like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, she expected that as his response, that kind of way. Other than that, she's basically talking about how she likes to control things or how she likes to see herself as the hero where the whole world is against you.
But also like questioning like, why don't all the other NPCs in the game rise up against the demon?
Yeah, why do you have to be the hero to save the world from the devil? How come all the NPCs don't do it?
Yeah. And then that begins to make you think, it's like, oh yeah, is she working? Is she actually working as part with Itsuki? Or is Itsuki already
Or
dead?
Is this her plan, basically?
Yeah, she's trying to bring down this corrupt plan. The
system is pretty fucked. If she considers herself trying to beat the big bad, it's like, this is a place where they're going to bend the laws to make it easier to do shit like test medicine on people and construct things unsafely.
Yes, because that was the point where it was like, oh yeah, maybe she's doing this against, he's just been drawn in because he's part of the system, even though, we do get his line, important line, I think is his, which makes you like him more, is his line about what justice is and justice.
Yeah, because he once says she's going to work with him now rather than assume he's part of the corrupt system, and it's like, what do you define as justice? And I think he's generally the definition of justice that I would have towards being a good person, as in like, you don't know that you're right, but you strive to be it, and sometimes, basically that kind of way.
It's like constantly questioning what justice is what justice exactly. is.
Exactly. Yeah.
You kind of like but there's like still little things, and you're like, oh, is he just super paranoid because he's a man and she's a woman?
Yeah, as I turned him against women in general, or just like, just in case, it's her in disguise, I have to do this.
And it's the story saying that, like, inordinately sexy, but it's like, at the same time, it's like, nobody's done anything to her. Mm. It's not like doing the story, it's not like doing the sort of, she shouldn't have been so sexy if we didn't want these men to do this, but this time it's, she shouldn't have been so sexy if you didn't want the men to commit suicide.
And is she singling out this guy because he might be the one good guy in the corrupt system? Is that why she keeps trying to talk to him?
Yeah.
That kind of way. Yeah.
But I really like this show because it never gives you the feeling that it's taking necessarily our hero's point of view.
Yeah.
And I'm never
sure. If it's showing us that point of view, it's saying like, is this are you seeing what's actually happening here? That kind of way.
Yeah. But also to me, it feels like it's never quite tamed. It's not necessarily the story's point of view either. It's like detached again a little step further, as if to say, this is how we're going to present the story. Cause I don't entirely know.
Essentially,
where the
like, she
going.
Can, like she states, she's the main character. She's the hero who's going to beat the baddie. And we're not seeing it from her point of view.
Yeah.
We're seeing it from people reacting to her.
Cause there's so much in that first half where I'm like, what is this show's view on women?
Yeah, really. Uncomfortably so. Mm.
But it was more like, it wasn't so much the show, it's like, what is this story's point of view? Because I never felt so much that the show had necessarily a bad view or not, but it was like, I was questioning, like, where is this story going? And this, like, but for the very same reason what the story is telling is like, oh yeah, these things, but nothing actually happened. And it's like...
Yeah.
So is it, because obviously I hadn't clued on until I was reading one of the, Anime News Network's reviews, is like the Babylon thing is probably a referral to the Whore of Babylon.
Oh, I thought it was like the tower. Okay. Like, as in, you know, because it's a city that they're trying to build up and make a new kind of world. And also the thing of taming the new fire, that kind of thing. Achieving a godlike stuff. But yeah, okay, I see what you mean.
So I'm like, oh, is it like demonizing women? But I'm not sure it is. That's the thing. I think it plays itself. Because it never portrays
men. I feel like it's not trying
well
to demonize women. Because the men don't look particularly good. Like, you're watching that scene with her uncle, the doctor, yes, explaining his shit. And he's like, yeah, it was super fucked up. And you're looking at him as like, are you some kind of fucking, like, crazy person? Or you're basically like, you're entirely uncomfortable in that scene. Similar to the scene in, not the same way, but similar to the scene in episode 2 where she's using her powers on our main character. Where it's a very uncomfortable scene to watch. In the way it's put together.
And obviously the thing other people compare it to, is particularly that second episode, is it's like, this is the Paul Verhoeven anime. This is, you feel like, if Paul Verhoeven was ever to make an anime, or if you ever wanted to make a live action version of this, it's like Paul Verhoeven might be the person you want to get in. Because it kind of gives me that same thing. I need to watch that Fooly Cooly 3, but I might have to wait till next year, because we want to do it for a podcast, and we've already got too many podcasts to record.
Sure.
But yeah, this is, again, I mean, everything's super enjoyable. I think this was a really good week, partly because there was less things to watch, so never felt like I was rushing.
Maybe that's the message. That is generally the problem. Like, I know we're saying, like, well, we're watching anime from the week of blank to blank. But, like, there's too much to watch. I was enjoying Fire Force, but it's just I was enjoying other things more. And just to make it easier on the workload, I'll probably go back and watch it again. Same way I've gone back and watched other things before. But it's a good fucking problem to have, the most part. And this week was pretty calm for that. But, yeah, everything was pretty solid. Like, I don't think there was a bad episode I watched this week.
Yeah, I mean, I missed not having Nikitaro to watch.
That's true, I did miss out on that.
More than I missed having My Hero Academia. I mean, partly because I don't know what I'm getting with Kitaro, that's the thing.
Yeah, it's always a pleasant surprise, or seems to always be a pleasant surprise, yeah.
Whereas, with My Hero Academia, the only thing which could be a surprise if it's an unpleasant surprise, if it's a filler episode or they screw something up. They never screw anything up, that's the thing.
They've done pretty good on that. I mean, like, I've enjoyed the filler to some extent. I don't mind the filler as much, but it's if they adapt it well, and so far they've done fine. They've done fine to good,
yes,
basically. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little hornier than the comic is.
God, yeah. Fuck's sake.
What can you expect from a show written by the guy who wrote Valkyrie Drive Mermaids?
I was trying to think what was the I would even like struggle to say that Babylon is the horniest show this season.
No, it's not. It's about horniness.
Horniness isn't it's integral to it, but it's not a horny show.
No.
Yeah.
No, it'll probably be it's either Fire Force of the things you're watching. It probably is My Hero Academia of the things I'm watching, but even then it's probably not going to be very horny because I think only two of the female characters have got regular appearance. Well, three, because I forget about the girl from the.
Oh, the dominatrix one, yeah.
No, the older, the one who's the classmate with dot eyes and goth boy.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because she'll be in it a bit as well.
Yeah, it's definitely going to go that kind of direction. I'll say it again, my disappointment with Fire Force is like, why didn't you do horniness for like, the firefighter male guys, that's a standard fucking thing, you guys.
Well, that was being covered by that 5-minute show.
Yeah.
I did watch the first episode of the Extra Large Condom show in both its uncensored and censored forms. The censored form is the funnier version, to be honest.
Does it veer too much into horniness, and the other one is just because the smut is cut out, it's more so about the jokes?
No, I mean, it's just the way they censor it is very funny in the censored version.
Oh, okay. Right.
But on the uncensored version, there's just one bit which is a little too skeevy for me.
Fair enough.
Even I'm not the target audience for it, but I'm like, don't seduce her while she's drunk. Don't let that be the first time you have sex. It's when she's drunk.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just curious, and I watched the censored version, which I thought was very funny. I watched the uncensored version, which I was like, okay, yeah, it's less funny once you stick all the sex back into it.
Yeah, well, if they're having fun with the censoring as well, that becomes an extra joke.
Yeah, it's just like, he's like, I can't, but yeah, it's the fact that rather than put, they like use like an XL stamp on everything. So like when he's pulling out a long string of condoms, it's just like a long string of XL stamps all over it. And it's like, okay. Why are you censoring the condoms? Well, because it's
too
probably,
sexual.
It's funnier to have it censored with the XL. And then the sex scene is just your lad sitting with his top off and holding a banana. That's all it is in the censored version.
Okay.
There you go. The only other thing I watched this week was from 1984, so did not air this.
Doesn't fit within the week, yeah.
Well, to be honest, that extra large condom thing didn't fit in the week either. But
fair enough.
That was from however many 7 weeks ago, or whatever it was there.
Oh, geez, fair enough, yeah.
Righty ho, that is it for this week. Blimey, Charlie, what a short episode!
It's nice for a change, once in a while.
Yeah. Before we say goodbye, no, I don't know what's coming up on Secret Santa about us all dying right in the brain. Let's not say goodbye. Let's just say goodbye. Goodbye. Uh-huh. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
Hopefully with Niall.
Yep.
Because otherwise, I don't know what we're going to do. Well.
Another podcast, I presume.
Another podcast just without him. But I'm just hoping, because if he's not here, that means something's gone wrong.
Yeah, hopefully everything goes right.
Righty-ho. We'll be back next week. Goodbye.